crazy weather, you know. I'll read your book. This is a crazy book. So you're going back to the pyramid tonight? Well, this one's got a picture of it. And the answer is yes. Don't call in and say, is this a rerun? The name of this book is The Cosmic Conspiracy by Stan Deo, I guess, or Deo, D-E-Y-O. Don't ask me where to buy it. West Australian Texas Trading. Cost somebody $30, and they gave it to me. It's a weird book. And like all the books that I read to you, the problem is they all got some good and some bad, but the bad is sufficient that I can't really recommend them to you for fear you think I'm recommending the bad, and I don't want to take the time to cover all that I think is the shortfalling part of it. The essence of this book is to point out the existence of a Club of Rome. All of his interpretations, I'll leave you to judge as you read it. It is more in the frame of reference of the kind of things, though more sensational, that Carol Quigley's done in a solid, incredibly documented way to show there is a crowd of leaders in this world, supra-government, that pretty much determine the path of what goes on in international relationships. He is concluding a step or two beyond, this guy is, Quigley, as supranational, interlocked society of leaders across the world who rule by interlocking relationships and associations. He's got some interesting stuff that's pretty well documented. The weather's bad, you know. I'm going back to the pyramid. This title's, this chapter 4, Radiant Genius, Tesla. I'm going to talk about weather. I mean, we have news here, religion, this is the weather report. I don't even have a computer, but this is the weather report. On the stroke of midnight between the 9th and 10th of July, in the year 1856, those years keep cropping up, don't they? In the year 1856, in the small Yugoslavian town of Smiljan, or Smiljan, pronounce in Yugoslav. I mean, I can show you the world's greatest collection of chain-breaking stamps in Yugoslavia, and worth anything, cheapest stamps in the world. You could paper walls with them, but they're interesting. Stamps, yeah, I can understand that, but pronouncing the words, nope, Smiljan, S-M-I-L-J-A-N. In that town, one of the most distinguished inventors of modern times was born. His name, Dr. Nikola Tesla. Just curious, how many of you have ever heard of Tesla? Well, you know more about Tesla than you do about pie. Say that for you. Dr. Tesla was unquestionably a prolific genius in several aspects. My engineers ought to tune in on this one. Don't work so hard back there. Just lock the cameras down and listen. You guys up on the transmitter, quit holding it up to the wind. Go on in, sit down, trust it to God. Why don't you listen? I went by kind of quick, but look at it. By 1884, he had acquired a detailed knowledge of some 12 languages while attending various European universities. His mental ability was also quite exceptional in another way, because his mind could conjure up. You say, what's this got to do with a religious program? Well, we're doing weather. Jesus said, you can read the signs of the weather, but you can't read the signs of my coming. Now, I have waited to preach on Matthew 24 and those other companion passages deliberately, I did deal in some of the Revelation messages on the statements about those that see these things come to pass, this generation will not pass away till all is fulfilled. But I've deliberately, some of you have been quick enough to notice it, I have deliberately preached on prophecy for over a year and not yet dealt with those great end-time messages of Jesus himself. There's a reason for it. We had to get straight on the 10 tribes. We got to get the pyramid at least basically outlined. So that gives hope to you that think I'm going to wait another year. And the beginning of sorrows and the conflict between the historicists on that view and the futurists on that view, and what I hope to point out, that truth lies by incorporating some of both, and that error, like the error between the Calvinist in predestinarian theology and the Arminians who believe in free choice, lies in locking themselves into an either-or position when God periodically keeps his options open, and what we're dealing with is double fulfillment. So we have a long ways to go before some messages in Revelation and those gospel passages can be preached. Among other things, are signs of the time that people reference but have never really pinned down. We know about wars and rumors of wars. We know about earthquakes. But I don't hear too many preaching with some precision on how many more earthquakes are happening right now and where, and the diversity of them than any place else in the world. And who's dealing with the weather in relation to prophecy? Well, let's get started. That's just to let you know that it may be weather, but it's also related to what I'm teaching. His mental ability was quite exceptional in another way, because his mind could conjure up visual images to represent words spoken to him. Now, let me read that slow, because it was a strange but rare gift that he had. His photographic memory coupled with his mental animation facility, the ability to conjure up animated mental images to match words, gave him incredible advantages in learning languages and in problem solving. Instead of trying to figure out the French word for the English word, he had a mental image and just would surround it with words from various languages. And that gave him a fantastic ability in problem solving. So between 1882 and 1888, he patented many devices which employed the use of rotating magnetic fields, flying saucers, and which produced a method of transmitting electricity with alternating currents. For those who do not realize what this means, all the world's modern electrical generation, we're on such media tonight, all the world's modern electrical generation and transmission equipment is designed around the original ideas and patents of this man, Dr. Nikola Tesla, who once loved the American ideal so much that he became a naturalized U.S. citizen in 1889. Have I said anything, Joe, that you know as an engineer is wrong yet?
No, but you haven't seen this.
You know about him?
I have not thought about him.
If I'm saved now. If the reader is like most people, his first Christian... Let's back up. If the reader is like most people, and I just tested, his first question would be, who? It's a pity. But Tesla's name and the credit which belongs to him have been both suppressed, both of them. His name and the credit which belongs to him have both been suppressed in, quote, the interest of national security. Dr. Tesla invented a unique process for generating extremely high voltages between 1889 and 1892. The type of device which he designed to generate these voltages still bears his name, the Tesla coil. You ever heard of that, Joe?
I've heard the name. I never associated with that.
You've heard the name of the coil?
Yes.
I got some people up there, too, that have heard it, right? Hold your hands up. By golly, I got even transmitter people that know. Good. We're getting somewhere now. During these same years, he also patented several types of isochronous oscillators. Isochronous, is that pronouncing it right, you engineers up there? Then between 1891 and 1890, you never know what I'm going to do on festival, do you? Getting the weather now. Then between 1891 and 1893, he patented the would you rather? Now, little ones out there, we want to bless you tonight. You rather have that or? I mean, should we be bacon-headed Christians trying to save all of you poor little goodies out there by sundown, or let God save you, give you some direction and understanding of God's ability to know what was going to happen before man ever figured it out? I mean, we're in a time, the last days, when a shaking is beginning. People are saying, what's happening to the weather? Going crazy. Absolutely crazy. Some people even... Oh, here, let's read on. Between 1891 and 1893, he patented the Tesla wireless, that is, radio telegraph system, and developed cool process electron tubes. You ever heard of those? Joe, you ever heard of those? Here we go. Between 1896 and 1898, he published a still valid theory of radioactivity and radiated energy. During those same years, he developed high-potential vacuum tubes, the forerunner of all the fluorescent lights the world uses today. In 1899, he presented a radio-controlled, electrically powered submarine to the U.S. Navy. They failed to see any practical use for it and dismissed the idea. They now have them. However, one of his most incredible achievements was also accomplished in 1899. Great year, these 1800s. One of his most incredible achievements was also accomplished in 1899, though the Navy had rejected his sub, Hicksville. Simple people. This achievement in 1899 coming up was not rejected by the Morgans, the Rockefellers, and the Westinghouses of the world, those banking families. In 1899, he published photographs and papers to a limited readership detailing his discovery of terrestrial resonance and the law of propagation of conduction currents through the globe. You don't have to understand every word, though most of you do, I think, because we've got an intelligent crowd. Just get the gestalt of what I'm saying. The discovery of terrestrial resonance and the law of propagation of conduction currents through the globe. His paper also gave details in 1899 of his high potential wireless electrical broadcasting station, which broadcasted usable power, not radio communications, usable power by transmitting energy in the form of standing waves or stationary waves in the Earth's crust and upper ionosphere. During the summer of 1899, Dr. Tesla managed to construct and subsequently test one of the most incredible devices mankind has yet to see. Dr. Tesla had convinced Colonel John Jacob Astor of Waldorf Astoria fame of the inside crowd that Carol Quigley talks about. Tesla had convinced him to gamble $30,000 on this summer test The dry goods company named Simpson and Crawford contributed another $10,000 to the project, while Mr. Leonard Curtis, who owned the Colorado Springs Electric Company, contributed both land and the use of one of his Colorado Springs power generation plants. Tesla had chosen the Rocky Mountains for their frequent supply of highly charged thunderstorms. Am I boring you?
No, sir.
It was Tesla's idea to tap into these charged clouds from the ground using a tuned circuit. He had already determined, wouldn't it be awful to be a Christian that checked your brains when you got saved and you couldn't talk about anything but John 3:16 till you died? What do you got to talk to Jesus about when you get to heaven? Like God producing a bunch of retarded imbeciles that just barely make it through the gate. Jesus said, I am the truth. And in his spirit, he's come to live in us. I'm tired of Christians being afraid of truth. Tesla had chosen the Rocky Mountains for their frequent supply of highly charged thunderstorms. It was Tesla's idea to tap into these charged clouds. Boy, that's going past Franklin flying his kites, I'd say. It was Tesla's idea to tap into these charged clouds from the ground using a tuned circuit. He had already determined that the lightning flashes from these storms seemed to discharge along a specific stationary wave pattern that he had theorized encircled the entire globe of the earth. These lightning flashes went off along a specific stationary wave pattern that encircled the whole globe, is what he had theorized. Why does lightning happen at... Well, let's keep going. He built a gigantic Tesla coil. How are we doing, Joe?
Fantastic.
He built a gigantic Tesla coil. I just see my engineer out on Mount Baldy next week. I mean, if we can tap into lightning, just think what we'll do when the next FCC guy shows up. He built a gigantic Tesla coil, which used the Earth's surface as one plate of a spherical capacitor to the former. You understand that, Joe? He sounded like he's writing it down, didn't he? Like I bothered him while he was writing the formula down. You know who Joe is? He's my chief engineer. He's directing right now. We gotta talk. You know, you understand this, Gary? He ain't even there. He just left for the hills. Who's up there, John?
Should be Gary.
Go build a Tesla coil in the sound room. He built a gigantic Tesla coil, which, you know, you see, engineers meant to hear something new. They're going to leave, be the first one to get on it. He built a gigantic Tesla coil, which used the Earth's surface as one plate of a spherical capacitor to the former. He linked them with a dielectric medium, the atmosphere. You got that? Got that, Joe? Still with me?
I'm still with you.
To overcome the problem, what did I just do? I built a Tesla coil, which used the surface of the earth as one plate of a spherical capacitor to the other, and he linked them together with the atmosphere. Didn't need a wire, the atmosphere connected. Is that in layman's terms what's happening, Joe? Huh? He left too! To overcome the problem of distance, I'm going to have to go to cameraman next. To overcome the problem of distance between the Earth and the ionosphere, which ranges from 25 miles up to 250 miles up, this was way back in 1899. To overcome the distance between the Earth and the ionosphere, 25 to 250 miles out there, Tesla had aimed one end of the secondary coil of his gigantic Tesla coil at the ionosphere. The idea being that the charge crowding or crunching effect at the ball-capped tip of the 200-foot pole above the secondary would raise the effective voltage between the Earth and the ionosphere. Short and simple, he figured out a genius way to hook them up using the atmosphere to conduct and build up and compress until the effect was to bring them closer. His device consisted of three points. A secondary of 75 turns having one end grounded into there. So hang on, I'm getting to the weather. You don't have to understand it, it just has to sound awful complicated. The results is what we're getting to in a minute. Just think, he may be good. Thank God we're here, because we know he didn't blow the earth up. His device consisted of three main points. A secondary of 75 turns having one end grounded into the earth with a large copper plate and the other end attached to a 200-foot tall shaft topped with a 3-foot diameter ball. Now, Lenin can figure that out. He rigged up something with coils and grounded it in the earth and put a ball, a copper ball, say copper? No, it's just a ball right here. 3-foot diameter ball. How do you find the circumference of that ball? Just waking you up. So he's got a secondary with the turns attached to the ground, a large copper plate. That's where the copper is. The other end attached to a 200-foot tall shaft topped with a 3-foot diameter ball. Second point, a heavy gauge primary coil of 75 feet in diameter, which surrounded the secondary and was inductively linked by an air gap. Three, an electromechanical circuit to provide the high frequency, parenthesis, circa 150 kilocycles, circa, or in parenthesis, power source to drive the primary. All you need to know right now, it was complicated and could really knock you down if it shorted. Aim to the ionosphere. Interested readers encouraged to obtain a copy of Tesla's U.S. patent number 649,621 of 15 May 1900 from the original specifications file 2. Here, whole half a page of patents. Can I skip past that? I just did. Tesla's Colorado experiment was done at a spot very close to where this author's alma mater, the U.S. Air Force Academy, now stands. Now you got a little personal sideline. This author has spent many hours perched there some 700 feet up the slope of El Diablo Mountain, the Devil Mountain, watching those magnificent thunderstorms of the summer season in the Rockies. It is perhaps for this reason that Dr. Tesla's words, written in 1904 concerning his highly successful Colorado test, of July 3rd, 1899, struck such concord in this author's own thoughts. This is what he wrote. Tesla wrote, "I first obtained the first decisive experimental evidence of a truth for the overwhelming advancement of humanity. A dense mass of strongly charged clouds had gathered in the west over Pike's Peak, and toward evening a violent storm broke loose, which, after spending its fury in the mountains, was driven away with great velocity over the plains. Heavy and long persistent arcs, lightning flashes, formed almost in regular time intervals. No doubt whatever," Tesla's continuing to write, "no doubt whatever, we were observing stationary waves. Subsequently, similar observations were also made by my assistant, Mr. Fritz Lowenstein, who later saw the true nature of the wonderful phenomenon. The tremendous significance of this fact in the transmission of energy by my system had already become quite clear to me. Now, again, to keep it down to layman's terms, anybody that has the credentials that Tesla has, was the genius that he was, that figured out that certain stationary waves encircling the globe, those waves were somehow connected to the lightning flashes and energy release accompanying those lightning flashes at those given points of the waves, constructing a giant expansion on his Tesla coil that enabled him to somehow verify to his own satisfaction, that matched the genius of an Einstein, that his theory of such a stationary wave existed is all that has been said to this point. He's the expert, and that's what he concluded. And those that want to check his expertise, get this book and read the patents and read the source. It was in the Electrical World and Engineer of May 5th, 1904. Go to the library and check it out. It became quite clear to me that the transmission of energy by his system was possible. As the source of disturbances, which was the electrical thunderstorm, as the source of the disturbances, the thunderstorm moved away, discharges came successively on their nodes and loops. Impossible as it seemed, this planet, despite its vast extent, behaved like a conductor of limited dimensions. Tesla had discovered a process which could transmit almost unlimited amounts of electrical energy to any place on Earth with negligible losses. Yet bureaucrats told him an electric sub was a bad idea, and a Baptist with more teeth than brains, who was the lackey of the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations, put up there like a little puppet in the presidency in the mode of old Long John, whatever his name is, from Texas, that thought the whole world would cry when he resigned over Vietnam, think it's a big deal to turn lights out and save energy for the future. And we had an energy crisis, didn't we, a short time ago. We've run out of oil. People fighting in gas lines. Now we've got an oil glut. As if we're going to run out of energy. This is 1899, Tesla figured this out. Tesla discovered a process which could transmit almost unlimited amounts of electrical energy to any place on Earth with negligible losses. He had managed to estimate the resonant frequency of the Earth to ionospheric cavity at 150 kC. It was a good guess, but one which has later proved not as efficient as possible, because the cavity resonance changes from moment to moment depending on solar wind densities and sunspot activity. Now listen to this. The United States has, I'm going to anticipate something. When Tesla died, something happened to his papers. Just wait a minute, I'll tell you. The United States has a very low frequency transmitter located at the South Pole. What's it doing there? It is similar to Tesla's process. Do you believe in UFOs? There's a lot of strange things going on in the world the government doesn't want to talk about. Notice I didn't say I did believe in them. I just asked you a question. The United States has a very... Why are we having bad weather? The United States has a very low frequency transmitter located at the South Pole. It is similar to Tesla's process, except that it can be tuned to a frequency in the range of 7H small z. You know what that is, Joe? Forget it. Hurt, huh?
Seven
hertz. You mean that's not a car you rent? Even numbered superharmonics of this frequency, such as 14,336 hertz, 2 to the 11th power times 7 hertz, have been used by both the U.S. Navy's DLF transmitter at Australia's Northwest Cape and the American Defense Advanced Research Project Agency's DLF facility at Pine Gap in the dead center of Australia, one of the most secret U.S. government installations in the world. You try to get there and see if they don't eradicate you and figure out some way to have you die an accidental death in the Caribbean. See, we're talking about things the government doesn't like you to talk about. You understand what I just said? Let's read it again. Now, see, I happen to believe that you know how to think. You don't really have to think very much to figure out who J.R. is going to do in next on Dallas. And that's where most television aims. I believe you can think. You don't even have to be an engineer to understand this. I got them sitting around. They interpret the words. O.J. Simpson does not have anything to do with this hertz. Because he has the other one, Avis. Doesn't matter, neither one. The United States has a very low-frequency transmitter located at the South Pole. It is similar to Tesla's process, except that it can be tuned to a frequency in the range of 7 hertz. Even-numbered superharmonics of this frequency, such as 14,336 hertz, 2 to the 11th power times 7 hertz, have been used by both the U.S. Navy's DLF, what's that mean? Very low frequency. You got a VHF television in front of you, haven't you? Very high frequency. You got UH. That's ultra high, isn't it? Well, aren't short waves way down on the other extreme? How does that work? Tell me about short waves. Come on, you engineers. Huh? Shorter, the higher. There you go. As simple as that. Now, very low frequency transmitters are used by the U.S. Navy, Australia's Northwest Cape, and the American Defense Advanced Research Project Agency's very low frequency facility at Pine Gap, that ultra secret center. They have entire cities built underground there. You'll never get in. In Australia, it may be significant that the $10 billion North American Air Defense Command, NORAD, is buried 1 mile underneath Cheyenne Mountain, also in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. If one views the planet as a round ball of electrical fluid, as did Tesla, one can see how a resonant circuit using the Earth as a conductor would generate very high voltages at the antipodes of such a transmitter. Is that the way you pronounce it? If NORAD has a VLF resonance transmitter, then the antipodes, is that the way you pronounce it? Then the antipode of its broadcast would be near a very small island group in the southern portion of the Indian Ocean. Could it be that the still highly classified, electrically propelled U.S. submarines recharge their dynamic plasma batteries there? Hey, boy, this is straight out of Star Wars, isn't it? Furthermore, one wonders even more about the antipodes of the Pine Gap and Northwest Cape transmitters. Where are they? The Pine Gap transmitter sits very near the Tropic of Capricorn, and its antipode is very near the nobody else would dare try this on TV. And its antipode Give me a layman's description of antipode. That's what I thought you said. You know what the antipode of the North Pole is? South Pole. You're learning. So am I. How often I teach you on festival and learn this much? Its antipode is very near the Tropic of Cancer. The Pine Gap transmitter sits near the Tropic of Capricorn, dead center of Australia. Its antipode is very near the Tropic of Cancer on the center of the Atlantic Ocean's Great Dividing Range. That's where Atlantis used to be. The Northwest Cape transmitter, just slightly north of the Tropic of Capricorn, is, however, of extreme interest because its antipode is directly in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, where so much electronic disturbance goes on. And people have been blaming God for those happenings. Where many strange... Look, even a layman can figure out opposites and the strange phenomenon of electricity. If the whole earth is a conductor, the opposite pole of the Northwest Cape transmitter, directly in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, where many strange electrical phenomena have been observed in recent years. Some poor guy flying out there in his airplane can't understand why he's having electronic disturbance. You couldn't pay me to have my pilot fly me in, what's the thing he calls that thing? Charlie Brown, that little single engine plane, Bermuda Triangle. No deal. That's worse than landing in a prison camp in Visalia. I'm going to give the devil or his henchmen bureaucrats that shot at me. Now, with this kind of backup and furtherance of some of Tesla's concepts that he never gets credit for a strange reason, one must wonder, what is the purpose of the gigantic Russian VLF transceiver at Riga on the coast of the Baltic Sea? For over 3 years now, ham radio operators all over the world have been plagued by a somewhat elusive 10 to 15 cycle buzz that suddenly appears across a bandwidth of over 30,000 frequencies. The signal seems to last anywhere from 10 seconds to sometimes 3 minutes. Efforts to triangulate its source have always pointed to Riga. The signal is a Russian product. It seems to do nothing but jam random frequencies at random time. But is it simply a random jamming device? Am I boring you?
No, sir.
You want to quit? Boy, this is a good one to dangle if I want it, isn't it? Just go home tonight. Come back tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. It is, I'm going to be kind. It is known that the signal travels along the same cavity waveguide that Dr. Tesla's system used. The signal also behaves somewhat like a beat signal between two very low frequency signals. Yet the most amazing fingerprint of this elusive signal is its excessive bandwidths, over 30,000 frequencies. The signal must be a type of very low frequency, high voltage broadcast. Does that deduction make sense, you engineers? The beat characteristic is formed as it interacts with one or more existing resonant broadcast fields around the globe, still supporting Tesla's theory. The wideband static is caused by spurious electromagnetic radiation from cross field shorts and from leakage to Earth in the main signal. At least one other source of the, quote, other resonant fields can be attributed to the United States, whose transmitters, like those we've described, adorn the Earth in at least four places, some previously mentioned. It is quite feasible that the two superpowers are having a broadcast power war. And you know, Cuba's tried to get in on it, to the absolute panic of the FCC. Now, this may seem a bit far-fetched to the reader, but when he's apprised of the other possible applications of such a powerful resonant electrodynamic field, he will perhaps join this author in some suspicions. How are you doing, Joe?
Fantastic. We've got everybody on the phone talking about this.
Huh? What?
I've got Joe on the phone with us now.
You got what?
Joe in Hartford.
What are you on the phone with him for?
We're trying to figure out where you're going.
That's our engineer from San Francisco that's joined our other engineer in Hartford. We're making repairs, talking to our chief engineer, when they all ought to be listening to me. God, smite them with dumbness. That is of the tongue for 5 minutes. Joe's worked for me all these years, and he still thinks he can figure out where I'm going. When a living organism, I'm one of those. When a living organism is subjected to very dense and or very rapidly changing electromagnetic fields, various physiological responses can occur, depending upon a variety of factors. In some cases, genetic malformations may occur. In others, immediate tissue damage may result in the form of burns. Let me tell you something. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And the insanity of Nazism will never be duplicated in exactly the same form, but it'll be duplicated in its evil presumption that a select few can experiment to the harm of all the ordinary people. They don't like anybody that doesn't play the game. How many times has security been used to cover every kind of evil? Genetic malformations. In others, immediate tissue damage may result in the form of burns. Yet in still others, the effects may be purely neurological, causing prolonged psychotic symptoms like paranoia, depression, hallucination. Perhaps the most fascinating possibility is the use of such fields to model human behavior within the confines of the field. There would, of course, be distance limitations, but it is theoretically possible to induce subliminal suggestion, sleeplessness, and lethargy through very low frequency fields of some 10 to 15 hertz, which lie in the range of the major resonant frequency of the Earth to ionospheric cavity at 14.3 hertz. Geniuses can figure out how to create widespread psychotic responses. As Dr. Tesla once observed, the Earth is like a gigantic spinning ball of the electric fluid or ether of space. Most of you can remember from your basic physics that what appears to be solid got more space than solid matter as it's in constant motion. Earth is like a gigantic spinning ball of the electric fluid or ether of space. His observation would imply that an electromagnetic thump on one part of that ball of electric fluid would send splash rings spiraling around the planet only to meet at the antipode of the initial thump. They go around the globe, bang. Don't be an electrician, understand that. They're quite contrary to one's first thoughts at this place. These splash rings would not simply reflect from meeting themselves at the antipodes simply to eventually return to the source point. Not so. For they would indeed meet at the antipodes, but the vector sums of their meetings would not be head-on, as the density of the transmitting medium is not compressible. Instead of colliding, the wave fronts would actually produce a return wave front, which would then spiral back to the source like a spinning smoke ring or toroid of energy. This redirected wave front would only partially interact with the next oncoming wave from the source. This would be due to the fact that both wave fronts would be separated by an angle somewhere between 90 and 180 degrees, depending upon the relative motion of the planet's conductive surface in contrast to the planet's spinning magnetic field. That angle between the send and return waves from the antipode could also be controlled at the source by enhancing or retarding the wave pulse's spin moment. That means somebody controlling these transmitters could spin these things off like a pipe smoker can blow a smoke ring, having the power with those electrical generators to affect human behavior. If one were to then observe the path of energy pulses, one would perceive, you don't think God knew what he's talking about when he said he has to shorten the time at the end? If one were then to observe the path of energy pulses, one would perceive an immense global grid system which would be broadcasting power around the entire world. The grid illusion would be caused by the energy density spirals from the initial wave being overlapped by the energy density spirals of the return wave. Two such transceivers could explain the twin grid networks which Captain Bruce Cathy discussed in his book, Harmonic 695. I haven't read it, but I will. If such is the case, however, Captain Cathy's grid cell sizes appear to be in error, but only by a few miles. Because if the broadcast frequency were 14,327 hertz, then the cell size would be a diamond-shaped 13 miles by 13 miles at an altitude of 158 miles by 12.5 miles by 12.5 miles at sea level. All you need to know at this point is that they can be controlled, and even this guy can figure it out. Waves going and coming, having the capacities to affect not only inanimate things, but organisms. To tap the energy, you say, what does it got to do with weather? Just wait. To tap the energy of such a broadcast, you see, a few years ago, the United States didn't have four of these working with their antipodes. A few years ago, Russia, well, more than a few years ago, but in terms of human and historic perspective, only recently did Russia have the one at Riga. And these waves are going. To tap the energy of such a broadcast requires the construction of a tunable Tesla coil, which either operates at 14.3 kilohertz or some even super harmonic of it. Of course, the higher the harmonic the coil is tuned to, the lower will be the power received in an inverse proportion to the increased frequency. I don't expect anybody to be able to write a term paper on this when I finish. I just want you to have a gestalt that some scientists who know these principles can have some powerful effects on this old Earth's atmosphere as a conductor and the Earth itself. The Tesla coil's primary would be the high voltage inner coil in this instance, as the voltage will need to be stepped down. The total length of the wire, I don't need to give you all that stuff. Placing, let's keep on down. Depending on the field density, which could produce problems. Blah, 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 blah. He goes into all kinds of technical descriptions of how to make this work. He says, for now, this phase of the reader's education must wait until later in this book. He is only pointing out that Tesla created something that modern scientists, both Russian and the United States, are using that can make this whole Earth itself become a conductor and can send these waves around the globe. Then he says, the genius who won the Nobel Prize in 1912, Tesla, patented over 900 new processes in the field of energy conversion, received 14 doctorates from universities all over the world, resonated the entire Earth in 1899 with over 100 million volts, broadcast electricity over 25 miles without wires to light 10,000 watts of filament globes, devised the system of alternating current power generation and transmission which lights the world today, designed a force field to shield America from air attack in World War II, suggested a process for charged particle death ray, which is now a reality, discussed electrical weather control in practical terms in 1905, and devised a procedure which would turn the upper ionosphere into a single fluorescent light source to permanently light the Earth, that rare genius of a man, Dr. Nikola Tesla, who had crammed several lifetimes of research into one, was finally to expire a lonely and apparently forgotten figure on the 7th of January in 1943. Was he really forgotten? Or was his work so advanced that it has required two generations of secrecy to safely administer his findings? What happened to his papers? Now we get to weather. This chapter is entitled Affecting Weather Warfare. Am I boring you? Many of... Don't you want to know what's causing this crazy weather?
Yes, sir.
If I were you driving out there, I'd pull off and stop and get ready to swear. Don't swear at the traffic. Many of Dr. Tesla's incredible contributions to the world of physics yet remain to be revealed to the public. For, quote, too loud, security reasons, end quote. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm ready.
You off the phone yet?
Well.
don't impugn yourself. If he had only known, Tesla that is, what horrible misuse would be applied to some of his most promising ideas, turn me down a little. One wonders if he would have even voiced them. It is certain that some of his ideas are being used by Russia and the United States alike in producing controlled weather phenomena as instruments of war. In 1976, during the month of October, a new kind of radio radar jamming signal manifested. We read about that. The signal was triangulated to Riga, Russia's very low frequency station. The signal was properly blamed on the Russians, who apologized profusely for a few low frequency tests. Those low frequencies were in the range of 143 hertz. Sound familiar? About this same time, according to a report filed in June of 1978 by Edward Campbell of the London Evening News, quote, the Russians had a nationwide hunt going on for anybody from Yugoslavia worldwide who had ever known or met Tesla. According to the same source, early in 1977, meteorologists reported an extraordinary blocking effect extending down the west coast of America, and a similar blocking invisible iron curtain on the east coast and along the Russo-Polish border up to Finland. These blocks stopped the normal circulation of the weather. Scientific brows wrinkled in alarm when it was discovered that each of these doorstops on world weather, turn me down a hair, seemed to be associated, listen close, you don't have to remember the details, but I think everybody caught, he proved there were standing waves encircling the globe. Scientific brows wrinkled in alarm when it was discovered that each of these doorstops on world weather seemed to be associated with very large standing waves of electromagnetic energy. Meanwhile, world weather went haywire. Snow fell in Miami.
It wasn't Florida I got to blame for this cold. It just makes you mad. Damn that cold.
Snow fell in Miami, flood swept Europe. And the American nuclear submarine monitoring system went on the blink after two of the American observation satellites were destroyed by, quote, electron beam technology. In December of 1974, Howard Benedict of the Associated Press in Washington filed an earlier report on the subject of weather warfare entitled The Weather as a Secret Weapon. Benedict's article said that although both the U.S. and Russian official spokesmen had denied such weather weapons existed at that moment, sounds familiar, doesn't it? Research was, quote, underway. What else could they have said? Quote, we've got super weather weapons now. What if they'd have said that? I didn't add anything there. I quoted the whole way. Read it again. Benedict's article said that although both the U.S. and Russian official spokesmen had denied such weather weapons existed at that moment, research was, quote, underway. What else could they have said? We got the super weather weapons now? They're going to tell the world they got them? One could imagine the result. Even the smallest weather anomaly would have raised cries of war. It's war. I mean, it's snowing, isn't it, up on Mulholland Drive right now? And if the government had said that we do have weather warfare, somebody would be screaming, it's war. You don't wait for bombs to dry, you wait for snow to fall in the wrong place. They're not going to tell you whether they have them or not. The official position is one of, quote, preemptive weapons production over the Russians' probable development of the same weapon. One wonders what sort of weapons they were discussing. Benedict's article states, quote, current Pentagon research at the cost of $1.52 million annually is limited to rainmaking, rain suppression, and hail and fog dispersal. In short, confessing to some weather research, they say their budget is limited to rainmaking, rain suppression, and hail and fog dispersal. I'd say from Southern California's viewpoint, they're eminently successful in the first part, an absolute failure on the second part. They got the making part, the suppression part, they blew it. Last October, the Soviet Union introduced a resolution in the United States. Do you think they ever do anything like this just because they like to hear their voice? Last October was a few years back. This was written when? 1980. February 1980, so that'd be 79. Last October, the Soviet Union introduced a resolution in the United Nations asking the Geneva Disarmament Conference to outlaw weather research for military purposes. Why? The Soviet ambassador, Mr. Jacob Malik, said scientists had concluded that a future weather weapons arsenal might even include the ability to create acoustic fields on the sea and ocean surface to combat individual ships or whole flotillas. His article went on to say that by cloud seeding areas 1,000 miles upwind from a particular country, one could cause severe droughts for years afterward to the target country. Do you know the greatest drought in the world has been going on? Do you see the news of people being driven out of the country? Now, you sit off in Riga and decide who cares if half of Africa starves to death? We won't try it on the United States first. How incredible one can imagine the comments after such a disaster. Gee, the weather's sure been bad lately. What a pity. The report of the ambassador mentioned the possible alteration of the ozone layer found at about 25 to 30 miles altitude. Alteration by chemical and physical means to allow excessive ultraviolet radiation to bombard certain areas of the planet. Perhaps one of the most interesting possibilities that his article mentioned was suggested by Dr. Gordon MacDonald of Dartmouth College, an internationally known geophysicist and astrophysicist. Quote, "The release of thermal energy in the Arctic or Antarctic, perhaps through nuclear explosions along the base of an ice sheet, could initiate outward sliding of the ice sheet. The immediate effect would be to create massive tidal waves that would completely wreck coastal regions." He outlined a concept, Dr. MacDonald of Dartmouth, in which enhanced electrical oscillations in the Earth's atmosphere might be used to impair human brains. He said, "Research indicates that weak oscillating electrical fields can influence the brain, causing small but measurable reduction in a person's performance. Lightning research has shown that it might be possible to control lightning to create such low frequency oscillations in the ionosphere." Several points must leap out of the page to even a first-time reader. One, the use of very low-frequency, high-voltage fields in the ionosphere. Two, the heating of a polar cap. Three, selective lightning production. Now, the first point, high-voltage fields in the ionosphere with very low frequency, has been previously discussed in the previous chapter. Second point is not so obvious. Let's expand it. When a very low frequency field like Tesla's is tuned to a frequency that creates a complete cycle at the antipode to the sending tower, out and back, the thermodynamics of the energy exchange are uniform at both poles. However, when a frequency is used which completes a full cycle at the sending pole, it causes excessive cooling at the sending tower and excessive heating at the antipodes. So I can figure that out. Just find the opposite pole
from the ice packs and shoot it up there, and they're going to warm up. Isn't that what you're saying, engineers, or not? I figured that out. I'm not even an engineer. Could this be used to melt a polar ice cap, thus flooding either Russia or the Canadian coastlines? Is this why both America and Russia have established VLF stations at the South Pole? Indian standoff. One has to wonder. Oh, we're just all out here going to the polls. Government by the people, of the people, for the people. With the world being run by people that go to football parades in the rain, having this much power. Third point's linked to the first one. However, a byproduct of the production of those very low frequency, high voltage resonating fields is that one can direct lightning strikes to specific targets on the other side of the earth. What is the exact antipode of the FCC's offices? Will somebody tell me right now? Boy, lightning. Wouldn't that be fun? So what's this got to do with the Bible? You know, I've always puzzled about the false prophet. The false prophet during the tribulation who makes the world bow down to Antichrist. Who has the power to call down fire from heaven. I just never have liked to give that credit to the devil. But here you have it. A power figure. Can you imagine what masses in Africa and South America would do with a spiritual figure that could direct a lightning bolt? Byproduct of the production of those VLF high voltage resonating fields is that one can direct lightning strikes to specific targets on the other side of the earth. Hold on just a cotton picking minute. Let's just see if that thing says what I think it says in the Bible. You bored?
No, sir.
I mean, you know, I can mangle you. It makes it more interesting. Let's just pursue this for a minute. Book of Revelation. Thirteenth chapter. The false prophet. I had beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. He doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. I'm not saying this is the way he'll do it, but I can tell you right now, given the right circumstance, don't even need God's help. He can do it this way. If such technology is as advanced as all the evidence indicates, then the United States and Russia would be in an intense power struggle for control of those adjacently or diametrically situated areas of the planet which could be used as VLF broadcasting tower locations to affect weather warfare. Now let's just take a look. Get your globe out at the following situations. America has known VLF stations. We don't know how many that they have, we don't know. America has known VLF stations located at the South Pole near McMurdo Sound. South Africa and Transvaal, and in central and northwestern Australia. Three of them are nuclear powered. The antipodes of them are respectively in the regions of the central Barents Sea above the Swedish-Finnish border and Riga, so we can hit it, on the Tropic of Cancer midway between Hawaii and Cabo San Lucas, and in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. And on the Tropic of Cancer over the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. If America has other VLF weapons strategically deployed against Russia,
They would be in areas like the South Sandwich Islands, Cape Horn, the Southeast Tasmanian Cape, the South Tasman Range, and the southern portion of New Zealand's South Island. Russia has a known VLF station at Riga and a suspected one at the South Pole location of Vostok. The antipodes of these are respectively in the South Pacific Sea near the ice packs at the southern tip of the Albatross Cordillera and the Baffin Bay Basin ice packs, aimed exactly where they can meld them. Either location could produce coastal flooding or tidal wave phenomena under certain conditions. The clairvoyant Edgar Cayce, who was right on in predicting that in the area near Bermuda and in that Bermuda Triangle area they would find remnants of Atlantis undersea, they now find it off the coast of Spain, so Atlantis evidentiary data has been collected from Bermuda to Spain, but Cayce, who saw it years ago, also predicted. And let me tell you, his percentage was way beyond this gal in Washington, D.C. that the National Enquirer promotes. Edgar Cayce once predicted that the Great Lakes would become a part of the Atlantic Sea and the Hudson Bay at some future date. It would only happen if these ice packs melted. If the U.S. wants to protect itself from a direct VLF attack over America proper, it must surely be defending the sub-oceanic locality around the mid-Indian ridge bounded by 23 south to 55 south to 55 east to 120 east in the southern Indian Ocean. Conversely, the Russians' recent occupation of the Bellingshausen Sea region at the South Pole between the Weddell Sea and the tip of Birdland must indicate a likewise defensive posture for potential VLF warfare. It cannot fail to impress one that the draft treaty presented to the August 1975 Geneva Conference on International Disarmament by delegates from both the USA and the USSR contained the ban of 19 man-made weather catastrophes. Specifically, they included the triggering of avalanches and landslides, awakening volcanoes, causing earthquakes and tidal waves. Do you understand what I'm saying? In 1975, the draft treaty prohibited these two nations from using man-made weather catastrophes. Specifically, they included. Now, we're worrying about being able to police disarmament. Specifically, the treaty banned man-made triggering of avalanches and landslides, awakening volcanoes, causing earthquakes and tidal waves, harnessing lightning bolts, guiding hurricanes or cyclones to strategic targets, melting ice caps to flood nearby coastal states, changing directions of rivers, generating fog, hail, and rain, and deliberately destroying portions of the Earth's ozone shield. What is the real purpose of President Carter's, quote, Operation Noah's Ark? Why pick Noah's Ark? It reminds one of a flood. Well, I'll tell you why. Well, let's stop for a minute. Let's stop for just a minute. Do you realize I've gone almost 2 hours and I'm not even to the pyramid yet? Huh? I'll give you something here just for a second. I'll read you something. Let's skip over here a bit. Between the years 1897 and 1946, the average number... That's a long time, you know. You know the Bible says something about earthquakes in the last days? The average number of observed earthquakes over the Richter scale of 6 was 3 every 10 years worldwide. Between 1946 and 1956, for the 50 years preceding, it was 3 every 10 years. Between 1946 and 1956, the average jumped to 7 in that 10-year period. That isn't much. Jumped from 3 to 7, just doubled. In the following decade, from 56 to 66, 17 over Richter 6 occurred. Then in 1967, the yearly one-year earthquake figure for earthquakes over Richter 6 was more than 17. In 1968, 19 over Richter 6 occurred. In 1969, 21. In 1970, 24. In 1971, 34. 50 years, 3 per 10 years. In 1971, 34 separate earthquakes. Remember, the earth is fluid. All these waves going, experimentations, the crust of the earth is not that stable. Something's happening. 71, 34 earthquakes over 6. How big was the one that shook up Valley over here a few years ago? Anybody remember? Huh? During the decade of 1967 to 76, 10-year period, there were 180 earthquakes over Richter 7 on the scale. Why did Carter call his... What was the purpose of Operation Noah's Ark? Is a mini ice age on the way? Are you out there? Hey, how are we doing, Joe? Now, what have I got to say about all this? God's in control. God's in control. If they get done experimenting one of these days, gonna blow them all up after we're properly situated. But I want you to, you know, just thinking about it, I'm not half as mad as those graver drivers behind me and in front of me on that freeway. We ought to all gang up on somebody. Are you there or not? But we didn't get to the pyramid tonight, did we? Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, we'll get to either Noah's Ark or the pyramid. Carter's Noah's Ark. See, the next step I've got to do in the pyramid is rather complicated. It's about as heavy as this. You've got to have your complete attention. Because I've got to introduce you to the real planning room of the pyramid, which is erroneously called the antechamber, where the sacred Enoch circle gives you the relationship between the sacred cubit and the royal cubit, and why the sacred cubit had to come from God, which is the proper unit of measurement, which shows how damnable it is that they're trying to change our American inch and go to some other system. But I've got to lay down the principle of why you must read the chronology of the pyramid on an inch to a year basis, and why that Christ angle, as well as the descending angle to those that do not follow it in those passages of the pyramid, go an inch to a year. But when you shift to a... If you're looking at a map, you have a scale on a map, but then they have inserts that blow up a city, and it's a different scale. You interpret the passages of the pyramid, as long as they stay on the angle of ascension, it's an inch to a year. But the horizontal sideways things blow it up like an insert in a map to a different standard. And I've got to introduce you to the origin of the sacred cubit, which said measuring device has as its reference what only God knew originally. The size, diameter of this earth, and the proper measuring device on this earth has the earth's dimensions in view. So it's going to be complicated, too complicated to stay and do it tonight. So I'm going to go home, put some antidote on, a purple wart on my nose that's bound to come out. Sammy and Ron are going to play on the Jericho Road. I want you to help me. I have people on my staff that will tell you what a struggle it's been the last week to effect the determination that I would just literally throw the legal mess off of me and go back to teaching. I have to keep you informed of what's happening, but that's not the only problem. When you are throwing all the available creative energy units that you have in your system, from the time you get out of bed until the wee hours of the morning, fighting the powers of government to retain the freedom that the Constitution is supposed to guarantee, but wicked men don't want to let it guarantee it. You just don't have much left over. When I'm in a debilitating conversation with attorneys on so many fights that we have on so many fronts, see, the FCC deliberately, no question about it, deliberately set up a battery of attacks. Plan, because they have unlimited resources with our money, they deliberately zeroed in on this little organization, relatively, and made us fight on so many fronts as they attacked us, not all at once in one consolidated action, but they attacked us in separate actions on each station, until the energy that is expended when we started to turn the tide. The last couple of weeks have been like the landing at Dunkirk, and it's taken every energy I have. But I made an absolute just act of the will yesterday and today. Come hell or high water, the high water came. I would return to teaching, which is my first love and my calling, but I don't live in an ivory tower, and we've got to do other things. And if there's any reason that I can preach God's word where you live it, if that is true, it's because I live where you live. I do need your prayers for strength and your help, and I'm not dangling you. I do intend, God willing, to keep right on with this teaching, because the Sunday services need a lot of the stuff that I do during the week to give me the gestalt of background for you, so I can move us on into understanding some of the truths that not only sort out what's happening in the world today without appearing to be super mystical, just because God's word is clear if you'll do the work to ferret it out, but also show us that God is in control. And thank God we're on His side. Unlike some preachers that think they can give you a formula that will put God on your side, thank God we're on His side. And He is in control, and we're in safe hands. Hallelujah. I can say that in a teaching that is poor removed to some people from a religious program. So much so that thank God we lost most of them that didn't want to listen to this. But will you be watching at 8 o'clock tomorrow night? Because I want to carry on with the pyramid. I got some new books. I mean, you know, it's like when we handle the 10 tribes. I've decided I'm just going to take you through so many different authors, some of whom argue over when it was built, who built it, some of whom argue over when was the exact date in the processions when that pole star Draconis. Now, if you go down that passage of the pyramid now, Polaris is out there. But if you go far enough down the passage, the light won't shine all the way into the pit. But one time, a pinpointed time, it shined all the way to the pit, and the North Star, when that happened, was the Dragon Star, symbol of Satan. Now, depending upon the debates of those times, we've got to correct a lot of calendars, particularly the Gregorian calendar. I'm going to do what I did with the Lost Tribes. When I really get into the pyramid, I'm just going to bring you a mass of stuff until the Gestalt comes. And after the Gestalt has come, then I'm going to sort out what, in my judgment, is the safe path to trod as you make God's witness in stone, confirm what God's Word has said. Never will we go outside God's Word. That's rooted and grounded on the authority of Christ Himself. But God has a witness in the stars, and He has a witness in stone, and they all confirm. They all confirm His Word one with another. They all conform to it. 4,000 years ago, the architect of the pyramid pinpointed when the Exodus would begin. 4,000 years ago, exactly to the day, he pinpointed on an inch to a year scale, and there's no way you can change it. It's embedded in rock. He pinpointed the exact time between the Exodus and the crucifixion of Christ. You remember that old bat well that it went down in? That scary thing? All the people that I've ever read in the scientific realm have said that that tunnel that they dug up from that pit down there was dug as an afterthought so they could go in and check on the pyramid. Well, what in the world are we going to check on? There wasn't any body in it. And to those who think the pyramid's a tomb, what to ventilate the thing for? Who wants to smell dead bodies? And dead bodies don't need air to breathe. Air is for life. They ventilated it. That tunnel from the pit bursts forth into the expanded gallery that represents the time of the church and the resurrection of Christ. Perfect type, not type, perfect map of Him conquering death, hell, and the grave, and literally bursting out at the time of the resurrection. That stone monument 4,000 years ago pinpointed the exact day of His crucifixion and resurrection in relationship to the number of years since the Exodus out of Egypt, and it pinpointed exactly the end of that great gallery and the beginning of troubles that is the start of the last days. It pinpointed it exactly to a day in 1914 when the World War broke out. These are not accidents. And have you ever wondered why that Daniel, that is written in God's book, and Jesus gave authority to Daniel, that have you ever wondered why Daniel, that's written to write the prophetic picture of the world, spends a whole chapter on Nebuchadnezzar losing his mind and wandering around insane? And that ever puzzled you? As if they wanted to tell a bedtime story or a horror story so it'd stay interesting? And how many of you know that history proves he did not stay mad 7 years? I've even preached that, but I've done the research. I was wrong. History proves he was not insane for 7 years. So the seven times doctrine cannot at all refer to his madness. We can prove in history now from independent sources that there was only a 4-year maximum and maybe a little less gap in his reign. He himself testifies to 4 years that his heart wasn't right outside the Bible. So what were the seven times referring to in the book of Daniel of madness? And the power of a madman to rule. And you pick the date that you got to pick to apply it to a proper interpretation, that seven times from biblical chronology and the any circle of the pyramid, you come to the same point, 1914. Now, I got a lot of things I got to cross before I preach. I may preach on those, on the madness of Nebuchadnezzar Sunday. I may preach on 100 other things. Just depending on what we can get done this week. Will you be watching at 8 o'clock tomorrow night? I need your help. Now, you be there. If I'm a little late, Dad will handle it. He always does. Here's the song, Jericho Road. Go to bed mad at me, but be glad watching at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. I'll finish this.